Yes, yeah, and I don't think I've got any conflict. There's no financial benefit in that. Yeah. Mr. Mayor, I won't speak. I'm sure members have read this, and I'm sure they know what the intent is. I think that this is our fallback position in case Councillor Kerry's motion does not prevail or actually convince those who can actually change their mind about what the community expectations are of our planning committee. And I'll make this comment, that I only hope that those people that we do select actually do stick to their word. I was on the previous panel, and I can tell you that I was very concerned to hear that at least one person changed their tune, which I think is grievous in terms of the panel, and very disappointing. So I think we have to keep an eye on that, because we could go out and assess these people, select them, but then at the end of the day, they can actually let us down. So I think that we've come so far in over the last 10 years or more, Councillor Blesker and myself in particular have tried to get this committee back open again, as is other councils in the Adelaide environs. Every council surrounding us has their council open. I hear that maybe you should go on the committee to find out what it's like. Well, I was chair of the planning committee for a whole council term before the DAPs come along. We never once met in confidence, even though we had the mechanism there to do so, and that should remain, by the way. There should be that opportunity to go into camera, but it should be used sparingly. To have every item discussed in confidence does not create the confidence in our city that we would like. It caters for innuendo and the speculation about what's going on behind closed doors and what's not going on. You know, for our community to actually witness what's being discussed about the thing dearest to them being their street, what's happening across the road next door, is really important. For the media to be able to go along and be able to witness that is equally as important. So I think that this, and thanks to you, Mr. Mayor, for actually cottoning onto this opportunity, I don't think the previous mayor would have created that opportunity for me.
Your advice was taken to ensure that we're proceeding on the right side of the law as well in seeking the AP members with at least a commitment to transparency. Is that seconded? Councillor Kerry, do you wish to speak to it? Councillor Kerry.
Look, I'd just like to second Councillor Hull's motion, because I think it's very important that the people who we do appoint to the DAP are committed to openness and transparency. There have been people that have been appointed to the panel who said they are committed to openness and transparency, and yet once they get elected to the panel, and I can speak from experience, they've become strong advocates of having closed meetings. So I think it's very important that council shows our position and indicates where we want the DAP to go, which is to deliberate in open and in a transparent manner.
Well, this is an issue I'll never plan to give up on, and it looks like that we finally have a council and a mayor who do support this. I think it's only fair that the people we get on there are protected from the innuendo, people making the wrong assumptions. And by having it open, people can actually see why the decisions are made. Then the rules are actually quite prescriptive as to how those decisions are made. The fact that it isn't black on white, you're looking at the whole thing as a whole, and there is perhaps a little bit of a trade-off on some of the things that may not be totally compliant and others that perhaps can compensate for that. At the moment, people don't see. People believe that it's an opportunity for council just to increase its revenue by subdivision. That's what people think, and it doesn't do the people sitting on that committee any service. So by expressing this is what we'd like, we're actually benefiting those on the committee, and the independent members are aware, first up, what we as a council expect based on the views of our residents. We were told that it's not about how you make a decision in the previous council, but making the right decision. Whilst as a councillor I can't comment on that, the community would say that if you can't make the right decision in public, you may not be the person to make that decision. And I think that we need to be aware that this affects our community and having a situation where we have transparency. Now, with category A, I did, there may be situations where they need to go in camera. For example, if it's a commercial issue, if there's something that is particularly sensitive, if there are any issues where someone's personal safety is at risk. So if a developer or a resident has threatened the members of the DAP to vote a certain way, things like that, then it is covered under that section. So there are the provisions, if absolutely necessary, that they go in secret, but that is the exclusion rather than the rule.
Now, I'm probably the person who's catastrophically changed his mind on the DAP. I was in favour of open meetings. Currently, although I'm wavering, I have to say, I'm generally in favour, because I think it works best internally, to have closed meetings for deliberation, because it does seem that conversation flows better, opinions are thrown around the room more easily, or not inhibited in any way with an audience. But I can recognise that the public would prefer to have open meetings, and I can see that Councillor Valescu's points about what the perceptions of residents would be so I can understand that. Finally, I think in actual fact I would vote to actually have it. I would agree with the motion as currently, and I would agree with the idea of having the meetings open, because I know I'll survive, but even though I think it's marginally better internally to have them closed. One more point, that some of the members, or I think all of them probably, have mentioned to me that general comments, yes, that members of other DAPs do wish that they were closed again, but that doesn't stop us from opening. And that's all. Thank you.
I had 12 years on an open and transparent DAPs, and then I have had about 3 years on the DAP in a closed form. I believe at this point in time it is important for it to become open and transparent, so that there is some learnings going forward out into the community of what are the nuances, what are the decisions, what are the guidelines, and how are things decided on merit. I never want to go back to the point where I have people ringing me up at 11:15 with a childcare plan discussion. And I believe we're past that stage where people could come to us and badger us about what they want. But at this point in time, we need to be open, and we need to show why we're making these decisions on merit, or deciding that they do not merit passing. And we need to be clear that we have done our work and show the community that we've done our work on the development plan.
I'd like to just, reiterate some of the things that Councillor Hull and I have said about our particular ward. I support the open DAP, for a variety of reasons, and I think probably the biggest one for me is the education of our community into how we're making the decisions. I'm speaking for both of us. We've both received feedback from our residents when they don't understand why said development has passed, and we've thrown around the term not at significant variance. And I think that needs to be out in the community. They need to understand why the DAP is making the decisions they make, and and then they can give us useful, constructive feedback rather than just saying, I just disagree with everything.
Mindset where the whole sort of realm of planning decision making is a bit rubbery rather than computer like, people might not be happy with it, but at least if they understood it better, councillors and the mayor would face less flack perhaps. Anyway, other contributions? Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, just one for the panel. When you're selecting people that you want to be open and transparent, can you actually also make sure that you've got people that will maintain confidentiality? I think that's actually more important, because if we've got people that are breaching that confidential trust, I think we should have a mechanism to get rid of them. Thank you.
Thank you. There are certain requirements of burdens and restrictions on the DAP members. Yes, any other contributions? Then it's for Councillor Hull to close the debate.
Just very quickly, Mr. Mayor, there has been one reference to the justification of our current practice, and that is that you can actually speak freely without fear of being intimidated by the gallery or whatever else. Mr. Mayor, if we applied the same standard to this place, that means then no media, no residents, they're all out, because if they're not out, we can't make appropriate decisions. So I just wanted to make that point. We wouldn't do it, we shouldn't do it, and we shouldn't be doing it with the DAP either.
There is one motion that's been put forward by a member, and we also need to make a decision about voting delegates to the meeting. I will just ask perhaps Ms. Jarrett to offer any advice, relevant background beyond what's in the report, particularly when it comes to the appointment of delegates. Ms. McKenzie.
Through the chair, the general meeting will be held on the 1st of May, which is a Friday. In the past, council has appointed generally the mayor as the voting delegate, and then it's usually been the deputy mayor as the proxy. But it is up to council in regards to who they would like to appoint at the meeting.
I'm not clamouring for it, but I'm happy to do it if council decides. Deputy Mayor, are you in that position as well? Yes. Okay. Well, proxy's a proxy. God willing, I'll be there, but I don't know. Friday.
So Members, just to clarify, on the Thursday they will actually have the conference and seminars, which is the LGA showcase, where you'll have different speakers from across local government speak on a number of different topics. The agenda hasn't come out at this point, so I can't advise you what's actually happening on the Thursday. The Friday is where the general meeting will take place. Once the agenda for the general meeting has been distributed, we will bring that back to council in regards to recommendations of how we believe council may want to vote on each of the topics, and that's agreed to by council. So it provides whoever is the voting delegate some guidance in regards to how they may vote on the actual day.
Is it worth appointing an alternate proxy delegate? I mean, do we go that far? It's getting silly, isn't it? All right. If anyone else does have a burning desire to get another hot seat, now's your chance. No, it looks like it's a Hannah Hutchinson ticket. Okay. Would anyone like to move the motion as recommended to Councillor Westwood? And is that seconded? Councillor Valescu?
Is that relating to, say, if there was a police officer on the council or something like that?
Well, Councillor Hull, that might come out during debate. I'll come back to you if your question's not answered in debate. Councillor Westwood, did you wish to speak to the... No? Councillor Valescu? Anyone else wish to speak to the motion? No? Well, can I have some advice from Ms Jarrett as to Councillor Hull's question? Ms McKenzie.
Through the Chair. Yes, that's correct. It has been brought to our attention that in special circumstances there may be very legitimate reasons to withhold a member's personal home address. One of those situations may be due to employment. So that is why that motion has been brought forward.
Speaking in the debate, Councillor Hutchinson.
It's a question, actually.
Question? Thank you.
Just on that point, I assume a silent elector would be in the same boat. Is that what we're intending?
Through the Chair, no. We've actually done some research on this, and the declaration of interest is actually different from the silent elector. So on your register of interest, you are actually required to declare your interests from a property perspective, regardless of whether you're a silent elector or not.
Follow-up question with that, Your Worship. Being a silent elector requires you to demonstrate there's a need to be a silent elector in the first place, and I thought that justification would be appropriate.
Yeah. The advice that we've received is that members should be at least declaring the portfolio number of the property, which is, I think, the process which has been the common practice.
Worship, would it, I guess, following on, if someone does declare their property and it is in relation to the silent voter situation, I would think that that would fall into it the same way. So. Portfolio number is something that people may wish to find out where they live, mm-hmm. and they can.
Yep. This is the discrepancy at the moment, which is why we're progressing with this motion. So the advice that we have received to date is that members must declare the portfolio number, and that there's no exception to that. So the reason why we are progressing with this for special circumstances to have that withheld.
Thank you.
Just wanted to bring to everyone's attention again the fact that over the next few years through to November 2018, we have all the centenary celebrations happening. And so it is pertinent to have liaison councillors for the RSLs during this time that we have a lot of activities going on. And that's why there's been a lot of talk with the RSLs regarding this. I would like to offer my services as being an ex-service person to help in that regard with the liaison job. I'm talking about Marion RSL.
The suggestion for the Marion Club, which has got a lot on its plate, would be that Councillor Byrom, given her experience in the armed services and the request from them, that she be considered for 2 years, and that I would, given my family history, like to nominate for 1 year and suggest that the other ward councillor nominates following that for the next year. In that way, if there are property matters and other issues to do with the local area, we can take them up, but we can also support, I'm going to wash pans on, pots and pans on Anzac Day morning at that Marion Return Services League service. So I would just like to be part of it, and I'm sure Councillor Hutchinson said he would like to be too. The suggestion was that Council Byrom and myself were concurrent for 1 year, and then Councillor Byrom and Councillor Hutchinson were concurrent for the following year, and then, yes, they're happy to have two people.
I'm happy to do that. Now, I understand that Councillor Byrom's wanting to be involved with the centenary celebration activities, and I'm quite happy that she takes care of that. Obviously, she doesn't want to know that the bins haven't been replaced after they rang the council and things like that. But obviously, I think if we're looking at a citywide approach, I think that's important, because you don't want... it's good to have a central contact as far as those activities, and I think it's a great initiative on behalf of Council of Byrom to take that on. And we'll articulate to them. I think we're all meeting next month, and we'll articulate to them the role of the Council of Byrom will play as far as her scope of liaison as well.
Yeah, and in doing so, can I bundle a heap of stuff together to expedite the meeting? Conscious of time, Your Worship. Yes, please. I'd like to move the petitions policy with it. The professional development we might have debate on and some discussion for changes. The other one I think we could be a motion on notice, the repatriation hospital one. I think that's a fairly straightforward motion. I think that's just a few just to expedite the meeting a little bit quicker.
Mr. Mayor, the issue raised by the Ombudsman about private email accounts, I hate to think that in this nation that we as elected members can't be prepared to actually question an authority like the Ombudsman, but I am. I believe that in the Soviet bloc, in North Korea, maybe that state is quite capable of looking at email accounts or anything for that matter. But in this country, I would have thought that we would be able to send a private email or receive a private email and have that private. Now, if you are actually determined to actually evade the system by sending emails that probably should be in the domain of the council or in the public domain even, that's a different story. But I've actually raised this before and the media have actually picked up on it, that if a resident wanted to send me private correspondence, be it by email or any other fashion, because they didn't want the administration to actually see it, then I think they should be able to. That's my strong view. That there should be some opportunity for people to feel comfortable to know that their comments are not going to be seen by maybe the person they're going to complain about. And I think that the Ombudsman is probably not serving in the public interest in this determination, and I have a big issue with it. I think that's probably says it all, Mr. Mayor. I think I've encapsulated what I'm getting at. There should be an opportunity for even elected members to exchange emails to each other on a private email account about matters that they may not want others to see. Obviously, if you're trying to hide criminal matters or matters of integrity, a lack of integrity, then that's a different story. But I just find this confronting. As an Australian, I find it un-Australian, if I can coin the phrase. And I think that we probably should indicate that to the Ombudsman in some fashion. That's my view, Mr. Smith.
The Ombudsman's letter holds up the City of Prospect policy in relation to this as the leading practice. And I want to mention, because it's appropriate to have it transparent, that it was suggested by staff that there be a recommendation coming up to council that we adopt that policy, along with noting the letter. And I suggested that wouldn't be an appropriate recommendation to come to council. Let me just give you an example. Probably maybe dozens of times since I've been elected as mayor, people have contacted me, constituents and also lobbyists have contacted me on my private email account or my daytime work email account. Because I have a profile outside of council, a lot of people have found it easier in some way to contact me through these other means. Now, what I have generally been doing is simply forwarding such emails to my assistant or to an appropriate staff member for action. So it hasn't been an issue. But if you take the City of Prospect policy wording literally, I am using a personal email account for council business simply by referring people via that email to council. And I could then be breaching code of conduct because I'm not following council policy. So one needs to be very, very careful, I think, about placing those sort of restrictions. Secondly, on this topic, I thought it was of interest when I suspected that my email had been inappropriately accessed. I asked the IT people on staff at Marion to investigate that. The first response was that would not be done unless authorised by the governance team. The second response was, once I got through that hurdle, that they don't have the technology to investigate inappropriate access of emails, as I was suggesting. So I guess the moral of the story is be very careful what you put in your emails, members. Now, next contribution. Councillor Appleby, then Valescu.
Can I just point out that the actual section the Ombudsman quotes applies to councils and not councillors at all about keeping state records? So he doesn't actually point out any law that applies to councillors, and yet his subject heading says personal email accounts and council members. So it's somewhat misleading. If you see at the top of page 2, it says, however, under the State Records Act, the council must ensure that official records of enduring evidential informational value are preserved for future reference. So I really don't see what he's going on about at all.
That's right. Councillor Valescu.
I think this has got... I don't want to do these all en bloc. We've got a lot of... there's discussion on all of them, and we're limited with 1 3-minute discussion on all four or three.
You could have moved... You could move to amend so that... this item be dealt with alone, and if that is carried, then we'll just deal with this item.
Yeah, I guess we'll do that.
Right, you're moving that amendment?
Yes.
Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer? I'll put the... I can't... The trouble is I'm not meant to put the amendment yet, am I? Because we're meant to have our contributions and then vote on the amendment. So... It's a difficult situation.
There's a few different policies, so there's a few different ones that are coming up.
Well, I think what we'll do, what I'll do as chair, is just abandon time limits, and you can speak on all of the three matters that have been raised. So,
you've got your worship. Can I withdraw the en bloc then, just for ease of meeting practice?
Might save some time. Well, if you could amend your motion so that it just deals with the recommendation as printed on private emails.
Let's treat these things practically. Let's just do that then.
And the seconder, whoever that was, accepts that. Councillor Pryor. So we're just dealing with emails. Okay. Councillor Velasco.
Thank you, Councillor Hutchinson. I knew you meant well with that, but I think it was a bit more complex with the issue. My issue with this is I think that we should have a preferred practice, but I don't think we should be compelled. And I think we cover ourselves if there is some sort of record. So if constituents contact us on a private email address, especially for people that have gone through the election process and had another email address they use for contact, and elected members who during the caretaker period would have had a private email address for contact, because we weren't allowed to give out our own email address for any contact when we were electioneering or otherwise, but you know, they would have contacted us on council issues. So I think it's very important that it is a preferred practice, and I guess we can cover ourselves by sending a copy email to ourselves, so there is that official record. Yeah, I think that compelling people to do so could lead to an unnecessary or unwitting code of conduct, because then you might have freedom of information requests for email and a whole lot of process, and it could be part of the vexatious process, which I'm sure the Ombudsman is seeking to avoid.
Thank you. Councillor Crossland.
I think the motion, just that we should note the recommendation, just be accepted. I also note that we were trained in the State Records Act. Unfortunately, I don't know how many of us around this table save every single email. I delete mine. So they're under the State Records Act. You don't have to save every email, so it doesn't matter really whether it's on your private email, your council email, or even a Facebook message. Eventually, it's deleted. In fact, the Facebook message is probably the only one that can be recovered. The rest of them are pretty much deleted and gone. So I think just noted, but I also would say, looking at the prospect recommendation, it's actually impractical. They actually can't keep those emails for state records, whether it be council or not.
Thank you. Question for staff. How long do we keep our emails on the server? So maybe they say nothing's forever, but maybe our emails are. Other contributors? There being none.
Mr. Mayor, that I failed to provide an amendment, but at the time there was the motion was to deal with it in block. There wasn't an opportunity. But is it possible for, given the discussion tonight, that the administration form up an appropriate response to the Ombudsman, taking into account everything that's been said tonight?
I tell you what, without having to go through the formal process of an amendment, I will draft as spokesperson for the council a suitable response to the Ombudsman, taking into account the discussion, based on the notes that staff take. It'll be pretty general. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried unanimously. Right. The elected member training and development policy. Looking for a motion, Councillor Hull.
I'm happy. That I'd like to have clarified, and I have asked earlier in the term, was about the mandatory training that's coming in. What do we have to do to satisfy that? If we don't, what are the penalties? The staff have already intimated that as part of our ward briefings that may form CDB points, if you want to call it that, to its continual development program.
What's it called? Continuing professional development,
that's
it. CPDs,
CBT.
I think.
Yeah, got my acronym wrong. And maybe that could be also picked up in the policy. That's the only observation I made about it.
Yes, I ask Ms. McKenzie to respond to your question about what's mandatory or what's coming.
through the chair, there is four mandatory sections which is defined within the regulations. The way that we've been dealing with this is our elected member induction primarily covered off on all of those mandatory requirements. So those members that had attended our induction weekend have pretty much captured their mandatory requirements already. Part of what we're also doing with the current policy is that we will be keeping a register of all of the sessions that we undertake that will be, I guess, put on to elected members' registers for their training and development. These will include matters that we have undertaken in the forums. The requirements within the regulations is that it has to be, the training has to be provided by someone who has suitable knowledge and expertise and agreed to by the Chief Executive Officer. So I think the training that we've already undertaken and the training that has already been planned will pretty much cover off the mandatory requirements, and they have to be completed within 12 months of the election.
So I would have thought that with staff briefing us at elected member forums, plus the training that we had initially, we'd ace it. Councillor Pfeiffer, first of all, are you seconding the motion?
Yeah, why not? Thank you, Your Worship. I would second it, and in doing so, I seek the approval of Councillor Hull to make a minor amendment to the procedure. Since it seems to be transparency and accountability night tonight, I move one that's in line with that theory and that thought. Members, I want to make sure that if we are undertaking training and development, and I encourage members to do it, it's really, really important that we do, but that we actually all understand what each other are doing, and that we all have some sort of oversight over that, and we can see what other members are doing, and we can learn from that as well as being accountable to the public. In doing so, I propose a minor amendment to point 4 of the procedure, which is the reporting and record keeping section. And I note that, look, it is quite good that the training will be recorded within the annual report. I think that's a good thing. In addition, what I'd like is that any training and professional development attracting registration fees of more than, pluck a number out of the sky, $1,000 per head, or requiring interstate or international travel, requires that member to personally author and lodge a council report on notice detailing the professional development within 3 calendar months of undertaking that professional development. Thank you.
I'm happy, and the only other thing that I could see with that is that maybe members advise other elected members of pending conferences so they can actually be aware and ask questions or ask them to actually look into issues on their behalf.
Of clarification, on page 143, number 2, attendance at professional development activities, there is a paragraph there. It's not specific to the $1,000, but I'll just note that that may cause that paragraph to be changed. Otherwise, you're putting the same thing in. Page 143. Number 2, attendance at professional development activities, the 4th paragraph. Following attendance at a professional development activity, individual elected members are to prepare a report outlining the nature of the activity, the knowledge gained through attendance and any opportunities for application within the City of Marion.
Thank you, Your Worship. I completely missed that in my reading. So is the intention that is a report to go to council, is it not? Is that correct? As opposed to a report that just gets lumped into the elected members' room or onto the extranet? If anything, Your Worship, I think that might take it a little bit too far, because if you're going to like an hour-long LGA thing for over a lunchtime, like that's going a bit too far. If you have to lodge a council report on that. Yeah, I think so. Or interstate or international travel. This is something that we haven't done before, but I think it is really important to have that level of accountability. And apologies for missing that in my reading. Yeah, I think that's good, because I'm aware in the past that there has been reports that have been, you know, a piece of paper left in the elected members' room or something put on the extranet, but frankly that doesn't cut it.
If I spend $3,000 of my money to go to the Sustainable Energy Conference as an attendee, will I have to put in a report if it's my money? But I guess that's not outlined here. I would put in their council contribution. Because someone may say, well, look, I want to go to this conference and I think it'll assist me both for council and for other purposes. I'm looking for some partial funding. Or they may think, well, I don't want the ratepayers to pay for all of this, but I can't pay for all of it. I think that we should outline it to the council contribution that we look at.
No, I think it's really just council money. Yeah. It's on the, yeah. Yeah.
And The next bit would be in council contribution or requiring council contribution towards interstate or international travel. Look, I think we shouldn't be scared off professional development if we think it's going to be a benefit to the council. But I guess it's the sort of thing that the community and I guess the media would perceive as a potential benefit. So we really need to be quite transparent as to why we're doing it and the benefit to the community. There's conferences in nice places. People need to know that we're, stuck in the room, taking notes, networking, and providing something back as opposed to sort of going sightseeing or shopping and things like that. And also, I guess, if people do choose to pay for their own conferences, which I know happened in the past, and a former elected member at the time did refer to it as a junket, without actually knowing that these people had gone off their own back to do it. So I think having that accountability and letting the community know that, we don't take these policies for granted or for our own benefit.
I can't find it just now, but I'd like to ask a question about the elected member self-assessment. I read it when I went through it before. How rigorous would that elected member self-assessment be? And a corollary to that, when people do things that they believe relate to their broader community understanding, is it reasonable to call that professional development and have that listed? Like, for example, I went to Migrant Resource Centre and did a two-hour session on the whole settlement processes. I consider that has some community benefits. Would it be appropriate for those sorts of things to be listed, or must it be things that are dyed in the wool, Marion Council?
Through the chair, in regards to the elected member self-assessment survey, that survey hasn't been developed yet. Once the policy has been adopted, we will work with members to develop up that survey and then go through the process of undertaking that assessment and then develop up both a council plan and individual elected member plans moving forward.
The only question is in regards to the addresses being kept private, especially when people may be signing a petition in regards to if there's potential retribution in regards to the issue. I do ask because we had two issues in the last council. One was quite high profile and people objected to it. And there was possible risks, who knows, but there was another one where we did suppress about 7 or 8 names. So I'm just wondering if there's some clarity on that.
Yes, thank you, through the Chair. We've included in here, in relation to the name and address of each person who signed or endorsed the petition, to ensure the transparency of petitions. However, if a circumstance did arise where the safety of a person was actually going to be impacted by the publication of a name and address, that would be certainly taken into consideration. I think that it would be remiss of Council to place any person in a position whereby their safety would be impacted. The provisions of the Local Government Act in that regard, in terms of considering matters in confidence, would be able to be applied in that circumstance.
And I note that the petition form as drafted clearly states that the name and address will become public. Do you want to just follow that up, Councillor Valescu?
I guess also following on from that, if we can have in here somewhere that it is, we make that assessment. Because I think some of the criticism for last time was, you know, you've held back this many signatures on this issue, but you've given this issue where we believe there may be as much, if not more, significant risk. So somewhere along the line there'll be an assessment. I mean, nothing, you know, not a committee or anything like that, but just that initial assessment, so we're aware of it.
Well, could I ask staff, where is there in the policy that provides that protection? Ms. Jarrett?
The way that the policy is currently written, it doesn't actually identify that names or people's personal details will be withheld from the petition when it is actually presented to the public, presented to a council meeting. As I mentioned, the provisions of the Local Government Act in terms of considering matters in confidence, if it is a matter that is actually potentially going to impact on the safety of a person, that is a reason to go into confidence to consider a particular item, rather than redacting the name from a petition as a matter, of course, that then comes to a public council meeting. What we'll do is certainly include within the policy a provision that should an assessment be made that gives rise to a safety concern, that consideration of the petition may be done within the confidential provisions of the Local Government Act, rather than actually having it as part of our petition policy in order to, I guess, give rise to a different decision-making of confidentiality. I think that maintaining the transparency provisions of the Local Government Act and maintaining an assessment under Section 90 of the Local Government Act for keeping names confidential would be the most appropriate course of action.
I've got a supplementary question along the same lines as Councillor Lisker. Okay, it's just about social media and electronic petitions being picked up as well.
Yeah, just to add on that point, it seems that if we do a handwritten petition, people's names and addresses are going to be made public, yet we're accepting social media and tweeting where there are no names and addresses that can be verified. I don't understand why one has to be a public document.
Through the Chair, I'll take the report as read.
There are a number of graphs on roads and capital construction, traffic devices and sports facilities that the actual budgeted and the actual doing of the work are at variance. How much of a concern is that, and is it a serious consideration, or does it suggest that we are lagging in fulfilling those infrastructure works? How would you interpret the gaps, particularly on roads, traffic devices and sports facilities?
Through the chair, you'll see if we look at the specific one that you mentioned in relation to roads, the percentage completion line is actually really critically important. So you'll see that the percentage completed for roads is already approaching 80%. The blue bars are actually costs incurred to date plus purchase orders that have been raised. So it's actually, as it's stated there, is tracking very nicely.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question is along the same lines, and I refer to page 106, I think it is. It's obscured on here. But it's the page at the very top. It's got sporting facilities, which is what Councillor Telfer was talking about, which is doing quite nicely. But the bottom of the page, streetscaping, is in a compromised position. Now, here's Councillor Valescu trying to resurrect the streetscaping working party, and it looks to me that streetscaping is losing out to sporting facilities just on this one page. I'd like to know whether we're actually going to turn that around.
Through the chair, I'll take that one on notice for you, Councillor.
No, Your Worship, yes, I had pretty much the same question on streetscaping, that it was sort of flatlining as far as expenditure was concerned, but even though it's a fairly low base budget, I was just thinking there might be an explanation there.
The recommendation is in relation to the appointment of an acting chief executive officer. The thinking, and I've discussed this with Mr. Searle on Friday, that the sooner that we know who the acting chief is going to be, the better. But at the same time, it's been pointed out to me by Mr. Lindsay, the human resources manager, that there may be elements of negotiation, there may be questions about the impact on current employment contracts, conditions, etc. There are a few questions that need to be ironed out, which we're not going to be able to do if we simply pick on someone and say, you're it at this particular meeting. It actually needs a little bit more discussion. So therefore, we're suggesting a process, and there's a certain, council might disagree or might have another option, but there's a certain logic to the Chief Executive Review Committee managing the process and not only asking the questions and taking advice from Mr. Lindsay, but then negotiating to come back to the next council meeting with a recommendation about appointment of an acting chief executive. I hope people are following me. But the reason that there's a certain logic to the Chief Executive Review Committee dealing with the matter is that we've already been considering contracts, we've already been considering KPIs, and therefore what we hope to achieve this year, for example. Now, while all of that is a work in progress, there's a certain logic to having the same group of people go with it. So that's just an explanation from the Chair. Is that a question, Councillor Hutchinson? Or okay, moved. Councillor Hutchinson. I think now there's one more element to this. If you look at paragraph 3, and that is the recruitment process, never mind the acting chief, to actually start looking forward to the next CEO, whether we use a recruitment firm for everything or just a fraction or get advice on anything, we need to engage such a firm. And with the hope that we might be able to come back with a recommendation on that to the next General Council meeting in 4 weeks, that motion clearly is setting up the Chief Executive Officer Review Committee again to work with Mr. Lindsay and possibly others to come back with a recommendation about a recruitment firm to use, and then there'll be other reports coming back to Council about the further stages. So I hope all of that's clear, but that's moved, Councillor Hutchinson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yeah, I think that covers it quite clearly. Just to clarify again, that point three is not about a decision-making process, it's about creating the process. So, and obviously we will all have the opportunity to have our say at the relevant time.
Yes. Is that seconded, Councillor Hull? Any further contributions? There being none, beg your pardon, Councillor Appleby.
Your Worship, I think that we should probably appoint a CEO recruitment committee and everyone around the horseshoe get the option to put their name forward, because I think it's a big decision we're making and I think everyone should have buy-in. I don't intend on putting my hand forward, but I think other people should be given the opportunity.
Yes,
to be part of that process.
No, again, I'm sort of breaking the standing orders here, but I'm just going to informally ask for nominations to such a committee if people aren't content with the three nominated elected members having oversight. Councillor Appleby is quite right. There could be a lot of other options. Councillor Gard, you're interested. Councillor Byram, Councillor Crossland. Others? Councillor Tilfer? Councillor Hutchinson? And I'm interested as well. So that makes six of us. And Councillor?
For all the council, if possible, to, meet and perhaps ask questions of the shortlisted candidates. If there is a shortlist of a few, I think that's important for people to be given that opportunity.
Sorry, do you mean a shortlist in respect of...
Point of order, Your Worship. I've moved the motion. I think you need to take a seconder, because the motion clearly states it's about the process. It's not who's signing off on who we're getting the replacement CEO.
Well, I took...
Point of clarification. I was saying that we should appoint three members and that everyone have a chance to put their name forward for those right. Three positions. I wasn't saying that.
No. Well, Councillor Appleby, I invite
people
you
should turn up to the
no,
meeting.
I invite you to move an amendment, because the motion that's been moved and seconded stipulates that the Chief Executive Review Committee would be the three councillors. So to open it up, you would have an amendment which would replace the three or that committee with three elected members nominated at this meeting, and then we would have to have a process of selecting that panel. Do you wish to move an amendment? Councillor Appleby?
To do that? Sure.
Rightio. Is while that's being typed up, I presume that people get the intent of it. Is that motion seconded? It's seconded, Councillor Kerry. Just to help me out chairing this, does anyone have any issues or amendments with any other part of it? Are we just talking about who does it rather than what is being done? Not hearing any. Councillor Blescu?
I guess it's a little bit of both, in the fact that I think it makes sense to build on the work done by the current committee as far as the KPIs, perhaps open it up to other people if they wish.
Order. I'm not asking for you to contribute to the debate, just if anyone wants to amend any other parts. I'm just trying to get a sense of that. Councillor Hull?
With the original motion, it is about process. And will that process actually at some point accommodate Councillor Appleby's suggestion? We're only talking about process. We haven't actually...
Yep. The common ground seems to be that council wants three elected members to come back to the next council meeting with a recommendation as to the identity and terms of appointment of an acting chief executive, and secondly, with a recommendation, if possible, as to a recruitment firm to assist with the recruitment of a new chief executive. Now, the only issue I discern at the moment is who those three people are going to be. Right? So, I now invite contributions whether people want to speak to the amendment or the original motion. The mover can only speak in reply at the conclusion of debate, even to the amendment. So, any other members who haven't spoken? Councillor Westwood.
The way I see that amendment, we're just ready to slip in three or six names. So, maybe informal, is that right? That's the way you
well, the amendment is for a recruitment panel. Councillor Appleby's suggesting three names, so I take that as part of the amendment. Let's bear that in mind, unless you want to amend the amendment.
The way I'm reading it, have we decided on three exactly there, or just councillors so-and-so?
Can we just put comprising three, the following three councillors in Councillor Appleby's amendment, so that either both the motion and the amendment refer to three councillors, right?
It was more elected members.
Oh, three elected members, yes. Thank you. So that's clarification. Councillor Westwood, are you sort of on the page there? Yep. All right. So any other speakers? Then I'll invite Councillor Hutchinson to close the debate, in which he may address the motion for the debate. Sorry. Councillor Appleby closing the debate on the amendment.
I think we need to vote on the amendment, don't we?
We will, but you get a chance to speak first.
Yeah. We don't have any names there.
We would do a ballot, I'm advised, if this amendment passes. Yep. Councillor Hutchinson? Vote on the amendment to see if the amendment becomes a motion. All right, we're voting on the... Well... the amendment actually applies to both the previous paragraphs 2 and 3. So our scribing person will need to duplicate the wording of paragraph 2 as well as duplicate paragraph 3, which has already been done. Are you with me? And 1 as well, because that's what Councillor Appleby... Well, I guess it's reframing. We could have done it that paragraphs 2 and 3 are amended, but it may be easier for members if we duplicate the whole lot, but with the different wording. While we're getting that ready, Councillor Byron.
Thank you, Your Worship.
I think, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Just, I was under the impression to start with that the amendment for the, talking about the three people, was when we get to the selection process for the CEO. I'm quite happy with the three people at the moment to work out the process. I thought we were going to be, that was, when we look at the latter process.
My intention was that three people from the start, that the CEO review committee stick to reviewing CEO performance, and this panel see to the CEO recruitment. Oh, yes, it makes sense for them to look at that as well. Yeah, everything.
Point of order. So we're putting up the amendment, and there are four people that have indicated they want to nominate. If that amendment has passes, we then vote upon the members. Okay. So we haven't nominated the people that are on that CEO recruitment process. Okay. Four people have nominated plus another three. The CEO review committee plus another three. Yeah, okay.
Or not, and if I haven't, I'd like to. So I can't put another amendment?
Thank you, Your Worship. What a schmozzle, I must say.
This group is well prepared and well equipped with preparing the process. We've taken the spirit of everything that council has offered us so far and developed strong KPIs for the next CEO. We've spent hours and hours on this. We understand where the council is coming from. You know, there's going to be opportunities during the shortlisting process. In fact, I think even once we get down to a final shortlist, there's no reason why the entire council cannot have three candidates wheeled out in front of them and questions fired off. We haven't developed that process yet, so let's get on and develop the process before we get gung-ho.